From the land of Grand Teton University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of April, the last trading day of the month. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Dave Dickey will have today's news. I'll tell you a bit about Palmer amaranth and how quickly you'll need to control that weed species if you can recognize it. It looks a lot like water hemp, but man, does it grow faster. We'll hear more on that as we make our way through the Closing Market Report. And also a little bit about the weather conditions from Drew Lerner out of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And an update of the cash grain market from the folks over at the Andersons in Logansport, Indiana. Right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the nearby July wheat at 7.21.5 for the soft red. That was up a nickel. The hard red July for the day at $8.12.5, up 10 cents. May corn futures at $5.14 were down a penny and three quarters. July at 5.19, 2.5 cents lower. And September corn at $5.13.25, down 3 cents for the afternoon. December futures down three as well at 5.09.25. And the March contract at 5.16.5, 3.25 cents lower. Next year's May at 5.22.5, down 3.25. July at 5.27 for next year, down 4 cents, all in the corn pit. Now soybeans, May futures, $15.30.75, lead option up 6.75. The July down 4.5 at $15.12.75. August at $14.40.75, down 2.25. And November beans at $12.46.75. The new crop harvest month down a penny and 3/4 to finish the day. January at $12.52.75 lower. The March at $12.55.75 unchanged on the afternoon. Bean meal at $5.03.90 up $4. And the bean oil at $41.88. down 89 cents. Live cattle futures from the CME. April contract 145.82.5, up 32.5. June at 137.20, 17.5 cents higher. May feeder cattle at 181.20, we're up 62.5. The August at 187.47.5, up 92.5 cents. And lean hogs finished June at $123.12.5, $2.15 lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day. June contract, $99.88, down $1.40 a barrel. The RBOB gasoline, or wholesale price, at $3.07 of a cent. That's 5.5 cents lower. Ethanol futures in the May at $2.26 and a tenth, down 3 8 tenths of a cent. And the spread between the two is now 74 6 tenths of a cent wide. That's a penny and 7 tenths narrower than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $4.80 and 4 tenths of a cent, down 2 7 tenths. And diesel fuel for the day, $2.93 and 4 tenths, 3.5 cents lower. Gold futures, $1,295.90, down 40 cents on their settlement price in the U.S. dollar. Trading 20 minutes delayed at 79.47, down 0.33. Here's what the weather forecast looks like, as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. We should see in the area, well, let me see where that went. There she is. Isolated showers, some cloudy skies, 54 degrees. West-southwest winds at 16 miles an hour. They'll gust all the way to 22. Chance of rainfall set at 20% for the afternoon, and that will continue at 20% through the evening tonight with isolated showers. Mostly cloudy and a 41-degree low, and a 30% chance of showers tomorrow. Mostly cloudy with a 53-degree high. It will be breezy tomorrow with a west-southwest wind at 14 to 20. That'll gust all the way to 26. And then Thursday evening, mostly cloudy and a low of 41. Cloudy on Friday with a high of 58. Mostly cloudy Friday night with a low of 44. And Saturday, sunny skies and 65 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy and 45. Sunday, sunny skies and 65. And on Sunday evening, partly cloudy and a low of 46. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening, of course, to the closing market report on this 30th day of April. It's the last trading day of the month. On the phone line to discuss it, and the first trading day of May, which starts this evening, is Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, there will be some changes when trade opens tonight. For instance, all the limits have been updated.
Well, that's absolutely the truth, and that does start with tonight's session because the night session is the first session of the next day. So we'll see corn limits now be 35 instead of 40, beans a dollar instead of 70, Chicago wheat 35 instead of 60, and KC wheat 45 instead of 60. So we also, there are no limits now on the grain or the oilseed options. They've removed those, and it's kind of understandable that they did that just because of the fact that if we do have a limit up day, people can still spread themselves off using options.
Well, explain how that happens. What does that mean exactly?
What does that mean?
Yes.
Oh, well, that would mean that, you know, if we reach a limit level in the futures, you could go in and you could buy yourself an option to, in other words, let's say that you're short and there's no way that you can, you know, that you can sell anymore. You know, you're long and you can't sell, okay,
right.
and we're limit down and you can't sell. You can actually go in and buy an option, a long put, and, you know, then you've limited your loss right there, because if you buy a long put right where the futures are trading, the only difference would be, of course, what the premium is you would pay for it, and that could be very high, and yet, let's say in beans, at a dollar a limit, and let's say it looks like it's going to go down for a couple of days, that would be a great thing to do. It used to be that we had limits on options, so, you know, then that dried up too, and you'd have to keep buying further and further away from the money. Now they have no limit on options, so people should be able to get at the money if that's what they want. They'll just have to pay for it.
Now, you would have to buy that during the trading session.
Right.
You can't. Can you see the synthetic during the trading session? I'm just not really aware.
You can figure out the synthetic to a point. You know, the big thing, okay, let's say that we're down a limit, Todd, and we're down at $13 in July beans.
Sure.
And I went in and I bought a $13 put, and it cost me $3 to do it, okay? Well, I either paid the $3 to do that and protect myself from some more limit down days, because what that does is gives me the right to actually turn that put into a
sale,
a short futures, into a sell, yeah.
Right.
Which you can't do physically once we reach limit in the futures, because
yeah,
it stops trading. So it does give you that safety valve, is what it does, so that you can limit your losses. You know, it's just like, you know, that's one thing I think that producers are confused about at times, or even end users. If you sell the futures, you know, you can buy a call, and you have fixed how much you're going to give back if the market goes higher. It's your commission premium cost. And so you can actually limit the loss on that short futures position, or vice versa, on a long futures position, you can buy a put and limit the loss if the market goes down just by what you've paid for the premium and commission costs. And so there are ways to be able to manage risk, and that's what they're talking about with this.
So the CME Group has changed some of the rules, and there's just new ways to take advantage of those and look for opportunities, because you can gripe about it if you want, but the risk
not
is risk.
Change it.
Yeah, but that's not going to change it, is it, if you gripe about it? So
nope.
Risk is the risk. Hey, let's talk about a couple of other things. Speaking of risk, the yuan at an 18-month low in China.
Yes. Yeah, that was concerning today. You know, when you look at the, you know, the potential for what the export impact could be, and even the energy impact, when you look at the, you know, you look at energies, you were just talking about them before, we're below 100 now. I think that that is a concerning thing. Another concerning thing, of course, is China's very angry over the sanctions the U.S. has against 8 businesses over there because the owner was supposedly selling missile parts to Iran. So I think that this 18-month low really leads right into what we've been seeing on the export market. When you saw last Thursday, again, China and unknown cancellations, both in corn and beans. Last week, China canceled 54,000 metric tons on corn. Unknown canceled 215,800. And we know that unknown does a lot of buying for China. And on beans, China canceled 55,000. So, you know, this kind of makes sense now. because, you know, just like when our dollar goes down, our ability to buy other products is diluted. You know, it costs us more, basically, is what it does. And so it is concerning in itself. And some of these cancellations could be due to the fact that they might have hedged themselves against delivery issues. You know, one of the things the U.S. got pretty smart about, their freights included when they sell corner beans to China or any other place. Brazil doesn't do that. And so that's why they've been able to just cancel the way they have down in Brazil. So it is worrisome. Let's just put it that way. But, you know, we've seen a lot of other things happen over there, too, and they seem to still continue to buy.
Well, let's continue to drop around the world a bit. We'll stay closer to where you are there at home in China, meaning on that hemisphere. Talk a little bit about Ukraine, because they've got problems, and we wonder whether they'll get corn planted. They have some financial problems, too.
Oh, they do. They're, you know, the fact that their currency has dropped so much in value, you know, it certainly leads to speculation that they'll use poorer seed and maybe a less population, certainly less fertilizer. And in fact, I had an opportunity to talk with a fellow who was just over there and got back on Good Friday, and he said they didn't see any fertilizer on the fields that they normally would see when they go at this time of year. And today when they announced, you know, that the police and the security people say, you know, we're helpless when it comes to being able to defend this situation. You know, he made a comment. He said it's really difficult over there because a lot of the attitude of the people is, well, I speak Russian anyway. You know, so it doesn't show a whole lot of gumption to want to fight for anything. But the bigger implications, I think, coming out of Ukraine, and that's something that we don't talk about much, is wheat. I mean, they are a gigantic wheat exporter to other parts of the country, you know, or other parts of the world, and the impact that it might have on wheat also is in the background. So, you know, that Ukraine situation just doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon.
So that covers wheat, and then let's move to the southern hemisphere and the western side of the world, Brazil, Argentina. Maybe we ought to talk about Safrina crops there, second crop, both for corn and soybeans. They're having an impact, too.
Wow, they certainly are. I mean, the Brazilian Safrina corn crop couldn't have had better weather than what it's got. So it's just really in awesome shape. It looks like they'll probably be up 2 million metric tons. Today, Oil World came out, said they're going to raise Brazilian bean crops due to Safrina beans by about 2%, which pushes us up, you know, toward that 2 million metric ton increase. Argentina raised their bean number by 2%. You know, it just says that I think it follows through, Todd. You know, we hear so much talk about El Nino right now. And the fact that at the beginning of the growing season, there's always lots and lots of problems, and then it seems like it settles out. And that's kind of the way it's gone down in Brazil. They had a lot of issues, and now all of a sudden they have just almost ideal growing circumstances. And so, you know, we've built a lot of money into this market with the idea that we're going to have lots of problems due to El Nino. And that could be true, but more so on the wheat side because of the impact it has in Australia. And so it's going to be interesting as this whole thing plays out.
I want to skip to one last little thing, and it's not so little. That's the USDA feed and residual numbers. We'll get another set with WASD, and there's, still some jiggling in the marketplace as to what that number really is.
Well, you know, you hear a lot of complaints. We've heard it, you know, when we've talked on Commodity Week, you know, that number is too high. You know, why is it so big? You know, the question, I actually went to Jerry Norton at the World Board, and I asked him, would you please explain to me what this really says and why is it the way it is? And he said, if you look at feed residual, it's really production minus food use, exports, and carryout. And in other words, it's the miscellaneous category, so it takes everything in. But he also said, you know, that feed use usually is, most people, rule of thumb, about 4 billion a year. Okay, so in large crop years, residual can grow up to 1.3 billion usually. In small crop years, it maybe is about 300 million. And so, you know, we've had a large crop year. We're at 5.3 billion. And at the very beginning of the year, when this large number comes out, they really don't know how many bins have been built. They don't know how much is on the ground. They don't know how much out of condition corn has been carried forward. And that's a big question. You know, we've got out of condition corn here this year too, Todd. And you know, that hopefully will get used up during the year. So by the time we get to the fourth quarter, and that's why that September grain stocks report is so important, it'll help us get a better handle on what the true residual is. But at the beginning of the year, we always have this same issue. And that's why if you look back when we had 10.7 for production, we had a very low residual number. And so, everybody was saying then, well, it's too small. It's too small, you know, because we have all these cattle eating at that point in time. Well, that's just a reflection of kind of a rule of thumb that they use for the residual at the beginning and depending upon whether it's a big crop or a small crop. So to me, it really helped me understand better what it's all about.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Jackie Vakes with Stuart Peterson.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Now here's Dave Dickey with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says the U.S. may eventually need to move forward with Trans-Pacific Partnership trade talks without Japan if that should become necessary due to Japan's inability to find compromise. Speaking with reporters in Washington, Vilsack said, quote, "It is incumbent upon us to have market access, and if the Japanese are unwilling and unable to provide that market access, then the other alternative is that you have a less comprehensive agreement in which the Japanese are not part." Vilsack says he hopes it does not come to that, adding it's really important for the benefit of the TPP partnership deal that Japan be part of it. Shippers who use barges to transport agricultural commodities to export points are trying to convince Congress to increase the tax on diesel fuel used to tow the barges. Cargill, CHS, and commodity groups, including the American Soybean Association, National Corn Growers Association, and other farm interests, yesterday sent letters to the Senate Finance Committee in support of a 6 to 9 cent per gallon increase in the current 20 cents per gallon federal levy. Money raised by the user fee pays for maintenance and improvements of the nation's inland waterways, which includes some structures built in the 1930s. The International Monetary Fund estimates that Russia's economy has entered recession. Last year, Russia's economy grew 1.3%, its weakest rate in the past 13 years, with the exception of 2009. A recession is commonly defined as two consecutive quarters of contraction. Russia's economy shrank quarter on quarter in the first 3 months of the year. The first day of the hard red winter wheat tour brought a lower than usual estimated yield of 34.7 bushels to the acre and reports of drought-damaged fields. The same fields surveyed last year produced 43.8 bushels to the acre and 53.4 bushels to the acre in 2012. Tour leaders estimated the crop is still 6 to 8 weeks from harvest. Representatives from Nebraska and Colorado joined the final meeting of day one of the tour and added their yield estimates, suggesting that Nebraska wheat will yield in the low 40s and Colorado wheat will average a yield of 32 bushels to the acre. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
And thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find this story and the accompanying picture and a link back to the original article on the Bulletin website. There you'll see that recently the Weed Science Program right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois published some recommendations for the management of Palmer amaranth in the state. One particular recommendation emphasizes the need for timely application of foliar-applied herbicides. In particular, foliar-applied herbicides must be applied before Palmer amaranth plants are taller than 4 inches, or they simply may not work. Most weed management practitioners, of course, in the state are really pretty familiar with the growth rates of water hemp and many other weed species, but perhaps a little less familiar with how quickly the Palmer amaranth can grow. Cody Evans, a weed science graduate student here on campus, initiated work in the greenhouse to compare the growth rate of water hemp to Palmer amaranth. This was not a replicated experiment, but simply a demonstration of the relative growth rate differences between the two species. Both species emerged on the same day, and the plants were photographed every other day for a month. As the photographs illustrate, and you can see on our website at willag.org, and then a link back to the bulletin website where you can see all of the photographs, Palmer amaranth plants reached a 4-inch height less than 10 days after it had emerged. Aaron Hager, weed scientist at the University of Illinois, says the growth rate comparison illustration, of course, was conducted under greenhouse conditions, but experience suggests a similar growth rate of Palmer amaranth should be expected under field conditions. Timely applications, he says, of foliar-applied herbicides will require vigilant scouting throughout a large portion of the growing season this year to control Palmer amaranth.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
On this Wednesday afternoon, let's check the cash grain market now. On the phone line with us is Stephen Linneber. He's at the Andersons, Logansport, Indiana facility. That's the Climbers facility or nearby. Thanks for being with us, Stephen. We appreciate you taking the time with us. Farmers in or out of the field there, I think parts of your state have not gotten as much rain.
You bet. It kind of 50-50 shot depending on your location. Some guys dry enough to go, some a little wet yet and a little scared of cooler temps moving forward, but for the most part it feels like guys are on the side of the gamble that they're going to go ahead and put her in the ground.
How much do you think's in the ground now?
I would say locally for Carroll, Cass County, we're in that 50-60 mark, corn-wise, that is. Beans, a few going in here and there, but locally we feel well, we've made some rapid advancements since mid-last week.
No, if they're moving in the fields, they're probably not moving trucks at this point. Quiet there at the elevator?
A little bit. Yesterday, you know, certainly wasn't that quiet, but today, with the little less moisture than we were expected to receive locally, did die down just a little.
How's your basis been hanging in?
Not bad. May still relatively strong, as May is the month that we feel is going to be heavily dependent upon who's done in the field and who's not, so that one there remains relatively competitive.
So you'll be hunting for corn in that month, I take it.
Absolutely.
And where do you stand at this point?
Right now, cash price close at $5.10.
Oh, wow. So you are, I didn't even look. You're above the May then, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, well, essentially,
you're four under, I'm sorry.
Yeah, trading the July now, so essentially, you know, right around six under the May.
Yeah, okay. So, but you've got a very strong basis. What are processors doing in the area?
For the most part, same thing we are in terms of trying to find that comfortable level to where we're bought up enough to feel comfortable about the month of May. So basis, you know, very, very competitive at that, 10 to 12 under the July today.
So your expectations would be for both basis to stay strong through what, third week of May?
I would assume so, but we're going to need a little help on the futures market as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, a little slower, a little lower on the close of the day. You know, we continue to take that downward turn because the market feels that we've got planters rolling, you know, and the market continues to trade lower. I think basis is going to have to act in a positive manner.
Hey, Stephen, thank you so much.
You bet, Todd. Thank you.
Stephen Linneber is with the Andersons, Logansport, and Climbers facilities there in Indiana. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can always hear him again if you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's O-R-G.
It's National Oatmeal Cookie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1865, Robert Fitzroy died. A British naval officer and meteorologist, Fitzroy devised a storm warning system that was the prototype of the daily weather forecast. He also invented a barometer and published the weather book. In 1872, Louis Pasteur lectured at the French Academy of Science in support of his germ theory of disease, in which he held that many diseases were caused by tiny organisms. In 1904, the Louisiana Purchase Exposition opened in St. Louis. It was at the fair that the ice cream cone was reported to be invented. The hot dog and iced tea were also popularized at the fair.
In 1952, Mr. Potato Head is introduced to the world. The original Mr. Potato contained 70 body parts, but parents had to supply children with real potatoes for the body. Mr. Potato Head was the first toy to be advertised on television, and the advertising blitz netted Hasbro more than $100 million in the first year of production. Mrs. Potato Head came a year later in 1953. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Learned Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Learned Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City joins us. Thanks for taking the time with us, Drew. Let's go through the Midwest, the rainfall that we've had, and what we can look forward to in the next week first, please.
Well, it certainly has been a wet week, and it looks like the majority of the region over the past 7 days has seen rain amounts that were greatest in two areas. One is in the Ohio River Basin. The others in the upper parts of the Mississippi River Basin, and in both these regions, as a percentage of normal, way above average for a week in late April, with some areas reporting anywhere from 2 to more than 6 times the normal rainfall. And this is especially true for Minnesota and Wisconsin, and parts of Iowa, it's probably a little bit more like 2 and 3 times the usual. In the Ohio River Valley, also about 2 and 3 times the usual. Everybody in between saw something a little bit more reasonable. It actually hasn't rained very much in parts of central Michigan or northern and central Indiana. They've actually had less than usual precipitation over this past week. So not everybody is as wet as everyone else.
And so expectations will be that they'll be able to move in those areas, or will they get wet in the next week?
Well, I think there'll be some showers here very briefly over the next 24 to 36 hours in some of those drier areas. Lower parts of the Midwest should be dry through a big part of the next 7 days. Now, it may look threatening out there for the rest of the day today, and probably tomorrow we'll have a lot of clouds around it. Maybe a few spits and spats, but there won't be anything organized in the lower Midwest. And I think the majority of the region will see a steady rate of drying as we move on out in time. We'll see more sunshine and a definite warming trend taking place as we go into next week. And the temperatures will probably get up into the 70s, maybe even some lower 80s by the time we get to the first part of next week. So the lower parts of the region should be on easy street from this point onward once we firm up the soil. Northern parts of the Midwest are probably not going to be quite as fortunate. It'll be a little slower warming up there, and there will be a few other showers that occur periodically over the next week. Most of this is going to be Great Lakes region type precipitation, and from there back into parts of the Dakotas. I'm not expecting heavy amounts of moisture, but it'll just be a little bit too moist for some field work in that area.
The U.S. hard red winter wheat crop tour is underway, and it has been disappointing primarily because of dry weather conditions. What do you think about the crop?
Boy, it's not a very good one, that's for sure. As you noted, the yields, potential yields, are down considerably. The outlook for the weather for the next couple of weeks is certainly not offering any help. This next 7 days in particular, it's not only going to be dry, but we're going to see 80 and 90 degree highs from Saturday through Tuesday of next week. We're going to have very low humidity. We're going to have some wind blowing across the region. We will further desiccate some of the unirrigated crops out there. Yields will come down additionally. In the following week, we may see some scattered showers and thunderstorms that will help, but it's getting a little bit too late by the time you get into mid-May. The crop is going to start advancing too far. So any help that they get is going to be helpful, but it may not be enough soon enough.
Lastly, a quick note on China.
China is having about the most perfect weather so far that I've seen there in many years. There's been some timely precipitation. There's been an early start to the warming season. The crops should be going in the ground faster than usual, and there's no exception. The majority of rapeseed and winter wheat has developed extremely well. Yields will be high. The corn crop is going in the ground, like I said, ahead of schedule, and I think it will establish very well. I see nothing in the next 10 days that will harm this the situation over there.
Thanks much, Drew. Drew Lerner, of course, with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.